Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining our show today. My name is Wanda McKinley, and my co-host, Stephanie Affert. I am the founder of We Are Survivors, which is a nonprofit organization. Our purpose is to provide a stable environment for abused and battered women and children by providing temporary shelter, counseling, employment training, and support. We want to help women transition from abusive situations to being self-sufficient women in society. We Are Survivors' vision is to empower women and to show them that they can and will survive and thrive in society on their own, as well as to uplift them and provide them with a new life and a new perspective of what a normal life should be by enhancing and elevating their lives. I am a survivor of domestic violence. My ex-husband was very abusive. I was sexually, financially, verbally, emotionally, and physically abused by him for 12 years. I was raped from the age of 7 to 18 by my biological father as well as my stepfather. God has called me to be transparent so that I may help other women and children who have walked or may be walking in my shoes. Hello, Stephanie. How are you today?
I'm doing good. What about yourself?
Well, I'm trying to get over this cold that you so graciously shared with me. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, you're quite welcome.
Now, you always, yes, you do. You always inform our audiences of different fundraising events and things that we have going on. Can you share that with them this evening?
Yes, We Are Survivors currently have several fundraisers that we're currently doing. We have the Kroger Plus Community Rewards program, where each quarter they look at what you've shot and they send us a donation. We also have the Tum Thumb Rewards that we participate in, as well as the CPN discount card, where you can use it at thousands of places all over the U.S. And then we also have the fundraiser, where if you have a Compass Bank account and link it to us, or if you open up a Compass Bank account and link it to us, then we will get donations from them as well. If you want to support us in any of the ones that I just mentioned, if you could just send me a text at 817-320-2571, again, that's 817-320-2571, then I'd be happy to get you set up on either one of those or all of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Today, listening audience, I am very excited, and I want to apologize early that my voice goes in and out. I am hoarse. I am fighting off a very lingering, long cold. It's been all week. So I do want to apologize for that. If my voice sounds different, there's a reason. But today, we will be talking to, I'm so excited, our very first male survivor. And his name is Mike. Now, Mike, I want you to pronounce your last name because I dare not chop it up.
Good luck with it.
That's why I'm letting you do it.
Thank you, guys. My name is Mike Pistorino.
I would have never gotten it. Pistorino.
Most people don't. I'm from New York originally, and in New York it's a normal name. But where I live in Ohio, nobody could say it at all.
Pistorino. That sounds like
like
a gangster movie or something.
It used to be.
Well, Mike, I always like to Google, as we say now, that's the terminology, if I look you up, the people that I talk to, because I want to know about them. Now, we do follow each other on Facebook, and you're very busy. You are a successful executive. You are a marathon runner. Just saying those two words together makes me out of breath. And you are a very dedicated family man. You have three beautiful children, three girls that are very, very, very energetic. From the pictures that you post, they keep you busy,
all over the
don't
place,
they?
Just like I am.
How are you today? How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I've had a great day today. We had some real big news here in Ohio yesterday. The local rape crisis center got a $1.4 million grant from
the
state.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it's great because we're going to be able to help a lot more people now, a lot more. We have lots of children there and lots of survivors of child abuse as well as adult rape who come through the door every day, and we want to make sure that we can still provide free treatment for them.
That is awesome. Now, like I said before, I'm very excited to have you on our show today, and I again want to acknowledge that you are our first male survivor of sexual child abuse, and it is an honor and a privilege to actually have you on our show today. Reading information regarding you, your story is very powerful. And I'm just going to kind of throw out a few things that I did read about you. And you have overcome drugs. You've overcome alcohol. You have been homeless. You turned to crime, which led you to be in prison. And I just want you to share to us, how did you, I kind of think I know the answer, because I know that's the answer to me, but I want to hear it from you. How did you overcome these obstacles in your life? And not only are you an advocate for child sexual abuse, but you are, you walk and you run, you do marathons, you do more than just speak, you do physical things. Can you tell us about your journey, Mike?
Okay, well, for me, starting in the bad days is kind of like starting in the middle. But for me, I just got tired of being tired. And every time I tried to get some recovery in my life or some happiness in my life, I would destroy it myself because it was new to me. My childhood was very sad. My adult life was very sad. That every time I started to get sober and every time I started to get happy, it was such a weird, bad feeling to me, such a foreign feeling that I would screw it up. So when I was in the rehab, I kept going back and leaving and coming back and leaving. And then one day, one of my counselors said to me, there's something so dirty inside your belly. Something happened to you or something that you did that's killing you. You need to get it out. So that night, for the first time, I wrote down on a piece of paper that I was molested as a little boy. And I threw it into a barn fire. And I felt a little bit better. So I started talking about it more, and the more I talked about it, the better I felt. And because of my abuse as a child, I decided I was never going to tell anybody about it. So I would stuff it down where it couldn't hurt me. And as we all know, it's not going to work out like that. It came out in addiction, it came out in violence, it came out in jails and trouble and prison and everything else. But once I got that out of me and started talking about it, I was finally free. To a point where now I've told tens of thousands of people, I tell people on TV, the radio, I don't care. I now know that I was a little boy that was defenseless, and there was nothing I could have did about it. But if there is something I could do about it now, I can go around and teach kids and teach people to talk to their kids and to be more aware. I can teach children to ask questions. And if they are being abused, they need to say something so we can make it stop.
That is so true. Ironically, Stephanie and I yesterday went to, it's called Townview High School, which is like a law magnet. They have science, engineering, and we were asked to come and speak for domestic violence awareness. And for me, I've had speeches in front of adults, you know, I've talked about police officers, different types of organizations. But for me, that was the most nerve-wracking experience for me, to my first time speaking in front of children. Children are so impressionable, and they hold on to every word you say. And I literally, I was sweating and didn't realize that I was a ball of nerves, because I prayed before, and I always pray before I speak, before I answer a question, to God, please give me the right words to say. And I pray all the way to the school, pray walking down those long halls and those high heels, thinking, oh my gosh, I'm getting old. And I just asked God to just please lead me. And my story, for some reason, he led me to be a little bit more graphic than I am with an adult. And it touched so many children. They asked so many questions, which I love the fact that tells me you're listening. That also lets me know that something is going on in your life that you're questioning, be it personally or someone you know. Because when you're asking questions, you've been exposed to something. And that's one thing that adults need to pay attention is when kids start asking questions or if they make a comment or if their body language or something changes, there's a reason behind that. And after we got through speaking, to have kids come up in tears streaming down their face, it moved me like no other. And so it's really important that you're right, that we do talk to these children, we do educate these children, and to let these children know that it is okay to say something and to speak out.
Well, you're absolutely right there. I've had the opportunity to speak to school setting, but I have a real unique opportunity with the state of Ohio. I go to all the youth prisons, and I get to talk to the incarcerated kids, too. And with them, I just share my story, because my story is the same as their story. They are riddled with abuse and neglect and torture and bad parenting and everything you could possibly think of happened to these children. That's why they're in jail. And society wants to throw them away and lock them up and just get rid of them because they're bad kids. They're not bad kids. They're just like I was. They was hurt, and I was tortured. And as a result, I went around trying to make everybody else feel as bad as I did. And if I couldn't steal something from you, I was going to destroy you. And that's how these poor kids are now. And they're in there by themselves. When I get in there, I try to show them that I was in the same place you were. And now I have a great job and a beautiful family. And more than anything else, Wanda, I'm happy. That's the most important thing. I never thought I'd be happy, but today I'm like a ball of sunshine. I'm always happy.
And I had a child ask me that yesterday. They asked me, you know, it's like, how you're smiling, you're happy. And they even asked me, and one of the questions was, well, have you forgave your abuser? And I simply said yes. I said, because what happens is when you hold that anger within you, you care that that person doesn't even know that they have hurt you or tormented. They don't even know that you're still walking around angry and mad, and they're going on with their lives. I said, but for me to be able to talk about it, and I've learned because I was like you, kept it inside and didn't want to discuss it, and if I didn't say it or think about it, then it didn't exist. But what has happened since I have started to talk about it, I have become a happier person. I am that approachable person. Like I said yesterday, I was that individual that, you know, didn't want to be approached. I didn't want you to speak to me. I was okay with you thinking I was ugly, you know, the ugly person inside or me, because that's what I felt like. And now, you know, I am happier and I am bubbly and I'm more receptive to someone that's trying to reach out to me and not think that you're out to get me. And it does make a difference when you begin to heal from the inside, because then it shows out on the outside. So that happy comment, that is so true.
Yes, it's absolutely true. At one point when I was in treatment at the Cleveland Red Crisis Center, my counselor did an exercise with me, and she said, Mike, you're not going to like this, but if your daughter walks in the room right now and says, Daddy, my teacher raped me, what would you say to her? And I told her, I said, oh, honey, it's not your fault. And that was the day. I said, oh, my God, it wasn't my fault. Look at this. All these years I hurt other people and hurt myself because of something I thought I was a willing participant in. I wasn't. I was a little baby.
Yeah, and it's amazing, because that was something else that was brought up yesterday, and the young lady's comment or question actually was, well, you know, how did you go into other relationships? And that's like with your daughter, if your daughter came in and said that, it's instead of you wanting to lash out, your thing was to let her know, well, baby, it wasn't your fault. And that's the same thing even with relationships, because that one person abused you or hurt you, then you don't lash out to the next thinking that that person is going to do you the same way. If my daughter, and I have a 22-year-old daughter who is my world, and I overprotected her, and I made this comment yesterday. I didn't let her go outside to play. When it came to her going to school, I picked her up, her dad dropped her off. We tried so hard to make sure there were moments where she was not left alone or in our minds left vulnerable because of what happened to me when I was a child. And just come to realize that you can't protect them 24 hours, 7 days a week. And I just remember I had to always just pray about it and let her know that she's safe. But honestly, Mike, if someone asked me that question, I would really have to pray before I'd answer that question because I really don't know what I would say. Wow.
Well, for me, I had just gone into treatment at that time because mm-hmm. my oldest daughter was getting to be the same age that I was when I first got abused.
Okay.
So I was panicked. We'd be at the mall, and there'd be some guy sitting on a bench looking at her, and I would throw him out of the mall. You know, I would be confronting people and grabbing people and threatening people, and there was mm-hmm. nothing going on. It was all inside of me. It was all just me panicking. I'm on the board of directors for a program called Project STOP here in Ohio, and what mm-hmm. it is a very simple program that's age-appropriate, and it's going to be mandated into every third grade class in Ohio. And it's very simply teaching kids that no one's allowed to touch you, and if somebody has, you talk about it. And it's an amazing program. That's how people like you and I are going to break the cycle, through education and awareness. And by you and I standing on top of a soapbox and telling people, listen, when I was a little kid, I was raped hundreds of times, and I'm okay. And if I can be okay, you could be okay too.
Exactly. And I know when I told my story, when I said those words, if I could have took a snapshot of the children's faces and their body language and their eyes, and it was just like you could hear a pin drop. And then it was one young lady that Stephanie witnessed, just kept wiping her eyes. Tears, she was just fighting back, which lets us know there's something going on in her life.
Absolutely.
And for it to touch her the way that it did. And we actually looked for her because, you know, after we got through speaking, you had kids come up to me and come to Stephanie and they hugged us and thanked us and they cried and, you know, told us they know someone, and, you know, just they got our information and business cards. And this one young lady seemed to fade in the crowd. We even went to the classrooms to see if we could see her and could not find her. And I just pray that.
When I was looking at the pictures, she can be seen from in the picture. I looked at
Great.
The pictures that were placed online.
Great. And we need to let them know. Because there's a reason why that young lady sat there and cried that duration of that speech. It's something is going on in her. And for that moment, she was able to relate and see that somebody else, she's just not by herself. And that's one thing that, you know, we as a victim, because we're no longer victims, we're survivors. But we as a victim think we're the only one. Like we're the only person this is happening to. And I think for her, that moment, something went off in her. And I just want to make sure that she doesn't fall through the cracks because it was acknowledged and she was noticed.
Well, that's key, because these days, one of the things that we're trying to do primarily is let people know that once you do step forward and you do tell your story, you're not going to be broken. It's not going to get worse. If it's still going on, it's going to stop. Now you brought awareness to it. You put light to it. This guy can't do this no more to you. And the biggest fear is people aren't going to believe you. Society's changing. I mean, you got guys on your show now. I mean, 10 years ago, that would have been unheard of. No one ever thought that guys would come forward. And people approach me all the time. Yeah, they approach me all the time. They're like, how do you tell all these people what happened here? Well, you know what? There's a bunch of stuff I did in my life I wouldn't tell you about because I wouldn't want to go get in trouble. But this thing here, I did nothing wrong. Well, none of us did. We were just, you know, we were living our lives and someone tried to decide to take advantage of us. But by having the courage to talk about it, we're going to have it happen to less children now. And I want everybody to realize that. Oh, my God. Still with me?
And yes. And one thing, too, sitting here talking to you, and you said that when guys, you know, are amazed that you are actually coming forward. I've had several men here in Dallas, Texas, that have come to me that are survivors, but they have no resources.
Sure.
And that, if you don't mind, maybe, you know, if they're willing to call and talk to you and see what they, you know, to see what they can do, because we had a domestic forum, and there was even an executive director for a transitional home for homeless pregnant women, which she has a lot of different resources, and she couldn't even think of one place that a male survivor could go to. Now, it's going to be really interesting. Saturday, I've been invited to come speak at a class where the abuser has to take, because they've gone through the system and this is part of their rehab. And I'm kind of intrigued to see how this is going to take place, because it's like almost like I'm going to confront someone that has abused a woman. You're in this class for rehab, and now I'm standing here as a survivor questioning you. And to see, you know, to talk to you, to see what's going on in your head as to why you felt the right to do what you did. So that's going to be very interesting for me. It's going to be totally different.
That's a tough one, because, like, I choose not to work with the offenders. I'm not that well yet. You know, I don't have the patience. I don't forgive them all yet. Because, you know, Wanda, we're all still a work in progress.
Yes.
And for me, it happened to me when I was very little, and now I'm very big. So my mission in life is to protect the children, and I don't have the patience for the people who are still hurting the children. So for myself, I know my own shortcomings. I stay away from them. I focus all my energy on the victims, getting them help, and I walk them into the crisis center all the time. Somebody will call me after a speech and say, like, the same thing happened to me, or the same thing happened to my daughter or my son. But they're afraid to go to the crisis center. They're afraid to go to the police. I tell them, where do you live? I'll come pick you up. I drive them in. I hold them by their hand. I walk them in. I get them the help they need. But then I'm good at separating, because at that point I know I've done all that I can do. I can't base my happiness on theirs. So I get them to where they got to go, and I move on. But I've been invited to speak to sexual abuse inmates at the jails, and I just asked them to have somebody else do it, because I'm not at that point in my recovery yet.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. For me, it's going to be very, because I don't really know how. So I guess after Saturday, I don't know if I'll be able to do it again or not. Because for me, I still want answers. I think, to me, I have so many questions, because for me, I was able to, of course, question one of my abusers, but my father decided, when I began to acknowledge what happened to me, decided to disappear, run, change his phone number, don't answer questions. So I have so many questions still left.
And well, you know why he ran? I know why he ran. He ran because he is a coward, and all kids, all people who hit children, or hit women or rape children and rape women are cowards. I've been locked up with some, Wanda, and when they're stuck into a room with other men, they become weak and they cower down. So you're the brave one. I admire you for everything you do, and I have all these people. And you're spreading awareness. You're sharing your story to save other people's lives, and that takes courage. So I don't think, and for me, my abuser was killed in a drug deal when I was a little boy. I was happy. Happy he's gone, because these people don't just attack one kid or two kids.
Right.
Some of them, this is what they do for their whole life. There's always attacking people, and it goes on until they get caught. So I admire you for having the courage to try that thing Saturday. You're a bigger man than me, Wanda.
Well, thank you, Mike, considering all that you do. Speaking of your tattoos, you have, does your tattoos that you have on your, because they're you're covered, do they mean something? Are they significant to you? Is there a story behind them?
Yeah, I've got ones from when I was young. I've got my first tattoo when I was about 13 years old in the basement of a bar. Of course, somebody was making fun of me because I hadn't got a tattoo yet. And then I had a bunch of, I got some in jail. And then now they all celebrate my life. I've got all my children, my wife's name. I've got a Yankee symbol because I'm from New York, of course. I've got all my children's faces, and I have my favorite tattoo is my daughter Allie drew me a picture one day, a stick picture, and of the family, and she said, "Never lose this picture, Daddy." So what I did was I went and got a tattoo in the whole front of my leg.
Wow.
So now that'll just be there forever.
Oh my goodness.
And I've got a whole bunch of survivor tattoos. I got survivor across the front of my chest and some blue ribbons just to show people that, you know, it happened. And you only got two choices. People like you and I have two choices. We could stay in our pity pot and be sad and let the bad guys win. Or
right. We
could use it to piss us off a little bit, use it as fuel to be awesome, and have the best question people can ask you is say, "Hey, how the hell are you so happy?" You're so happy because I'm not living, I'm not living on the other side no more. I've decided not to be sad no more.
Yes, I have my life back. It makes it, that's one thing I can honestly say, because I was, of course, when God showed me my purpose and showed me to be transparent, I was very reluctant because I thought that I was in a safe place because, you know, it was not even a handful of people that knew my story. But now it's like it's out there and it's on the internet and it's to me, it's everywhere. But it's like the more, I'm always nervous. I have like these butterflies because I guess for me, I'm just always praying that I touch at least one person. I'm in a position or in a place at this moment, at this time, and someone is here that is supposed to be here, that's this, whatever words come out of my mouth is going to change the direction of their life. It's going to impact them some kind of way, somebody's ears. So I'm always nervous and concerned and just want to make sure that I'm saying, which is always going to be the truth, but I'm hoping and praying that I reach someone. And every time I get up, I always say this never gets easier for me. Once I get started, though, you can feel the adrenaline. You feel, you just feel a rush of empowerment because it's like, wow, it's like riding a bicycle. You start off really slow, and then you build momentum. And it's for me, it's such a blessing, though, to see once I'm done speaking, to see people really interact and to see people really want to know and see how people want to help and or, hey, I have this story to tell, or how can I do this and how can I do that? Now, you did say something about when you take someone to the police station and you have to be able to separate. I had an incident, and I thought that yesterday. It was so much going on yesterday, but I got a phone call from a friend who had a friend, and she was on the phone, and she was crying. And her boyfriend had just, he was already emotionally and verbally abusive. Now he's turned physically abusive. And she was trying to get out of the home. So I was making phone calls to try and find, it's another thing here in Dallas County, shelters are jam-packed. And it took the fifth shelter before I was able to find somewhere for her to go immediately. And by the time I called her back, she didn't answer her phone. And that worried me. And even today, I'm still concerned about her safety. So it's, to me, learning how to do all I can. And I'm going to, you know, of course be concerned, but not carry everyone with me on this journey. You know, take
Absolutely.
You're going to, you know, it's, I don't want to sound cold, but in the same token, it's like I have my healing. I'm doing me. But as these women and these children come across my path, they touch me and they leave something with me. And when you said that, it's like, wow, I know I'm going to have, there's going to come a point where I'm going to have to learn how to do that.
Well, it's a skill that we're all still working on, especially with the children. When I share, and a child, I've had children walk up to me and say, Mr. Mike, my grandma's boyfriend climbs in bed with me every night. To that degree, that amount of emergency, you have to be able to take the fact that you've done your part. I've done my part. I've done all I can do. I got this kid to cop to it and to admit to what's going on, to come tell me what's going on, which was very courageous. And
mm-hmm.
now I have to leave it up to the counselors and to the police. And to their parents, and hope that they all do what they have to do. But we have to stay okay. That's the main thing. You're not going to lose your empathy. You're still going to feel for these people, but you can't let it destroy you either. I have to leave them. When I leave, I got to leave them there and move on to the next people. Because every time I share, depending on the crowd, it could be one person, it could be 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't not reach in the next 100 people because I lost my mind over one person, one event. People who can share their story and stay okay are too valuable to society today. You know, I got to keep sharing so just maybe somebody comes forward, tells what happens, and then the bad guy gets pinched, the bad guy goes to jail,
mm-hmm.
and then he can't rape any more kids. My whole goal in this, Wanda, is real simple. I'm not looking to get rich. I'm not looking to get famous. I just want less kids to get raped. And if they do get raped, I want to make sure that the resources are there to take care of them when they come forward.
Yes, and that is definitely the goal, is to keep our children safe and to put monsters where they're supposed to be, which is off the
Absolutely.
Street and not with our children.
I can tell you one
now,
thing. I was locked up. Okay.
You say you were locked up?
Oh, I was locked up with a guy who was a child molester. And we were in the cell next to each other. And he told me he never wants to get out. And when I said, why? He said, because I'm going to do what I always do. And that's rape kids. He said,
wow.
I can't help it. He said, the way that you're attracted to a woman, I'm attracted to kids. I can't help it. You know, and just open a light in my head that, you know, maybe these guys can't be fixed. I'm a believer that you can't fix them. So if they're going to destroy a child and do that to a child, they should be destroyed as well. Lock them up forever so that they don't put my children at risk. They don't put your daughter at risk. You know, we just all live a nice, safe, happy life.
Wow. That, what he said, that was such a powerful statement that he, wow, that's scary. It's scary, it's unbelievable, and for me to even hear that even tells me that he's not even willing to even see if he could change or be a different person. That's just who he wants to be.
He gave up. He just subsided to the fact that he's going to do what he has to do to get to capture children, to trick children, and to get them along. See, I confront everybody. I ask everybody why they're doing what they're doing. I had a lady after an event last year tell me that there's a neighbor who spends too much time with the neighborhood kids. But she's afraid to say something in case she's wrong. So I said, do you know the guy's number? She said, yes. So he said, give me his number. I'll call him. And I called him. Said, hey, Joey, how you doing? So this is Mike Pistorino. Yeah, are you raping the kids? He's like, oh, God, no. Said, oh, do not. Don't worry about it. But if you are, we're on to you. We need
wow.
that type of awareness, Wanda, because we're willing to ask if there's artificial coloring in food, if there's dairy or peanuts, but we're not really willing to confront people who are raping our children because it's a dirty subject, because it's a scary subject. And that's what we're going to have to change here. We're going to keep making noise, keep
right.
asking the questions until it becomes, like my children know, if they see a penis, they tell me, period. No one's supposed to show you a penis ever. And we were at the art museum, and my daughter's like, hey, look, penis. I'm like, good girl. We're very good. It's just like you don't touch the stove. The stove will burn you.
Right.
You don't let nobody touch you because it's going to hurt you. If we don't teach them, the bad guys are going to teach them, and they're going to teach them the wrong way.
That was very profound, Mike. You're absolutely right. And that's even like yesterday when I was speaking to the teenagers. Like I told them, I said, you all use certain language in the hallways. So for me, I chose one or two choice words, but they were appropriate usage at that time, and it registered with them. And for you to teach your daughters the word penis and, you know, what is right, wrong at that age, that really is very much necessary because you're right. It's just like teaching your child, you know, your ABCs, or you're getting up, your everyday daily living habits and what we do. If they don't know it's wrong, then when they are approached, they don't know to say no. They don't know to run. They don't know to scream because, for me, I didn't know it was wrong at that time, and especially when it's your father, that's a person that you look up to.
Absolutely.
But
that's one of the things I try to teach them.
Oh, my goodness. That's
Well, one of the things
the program,
we always try to teach.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. One of the things we're trying to teach them is, you know, good touches and bad touches. And if they know, I always refer to it as a bathing suit area. Anywhere your bathing suit covers, whether it's a boy or a girl, if anybody ever touches you there, I assign my kids three safe adults. You go and you tell all three of those safe adults. That way, if one of those safe adults turns out to be the dirtbag touching the kids, the other two find out about it. So, you know, if I have like a brother-in-law or an aunt or an uncle or cousin or anybody ask, hey, do your kids want to come spend the night? No. No, they don't. I don't trust people. You know, there's
right.
certain people who earn their way into my life, and I know they're okay. And I've confronted them all. I've confronted my daughter's Taekwondo teacher, the guy who teaches my other daughter basketball. Hey, I said, if you're in this to molest kids, I'm on to you. Because the biggest thing to think about, Wanda, is that if one in four women have been some type of sexually assaulted by the time they're 18, which is a pretty popular statistic, who knows how true it is, that means that 20% of our country has been abused. And we both know that leads to all types of horrible stuff. So we fix this thing here, we stop this abuse or slow it down or make people aware of it, we fix obesity, we fix prostitution, we fix addiction, we fix violence. Most of the kids I talk to in the jails, they're in there because they've been abused. They're too tough to talk about it. They don't want to talk about it there, but they're there because somebody hurt them, and now they go around hurting other people.
Right, and something you said earlier really hit home because, you know, my thing has been people won't get to the root of the problem, like you were saying. They think that the kids are bad people. They're not bad people. Just nobody ever thought to or not that they didn't think, they never took the time to get down to the root of it to find out why they did the actions that they did. And a lot of
Absolutely.
It is because of a few different things like that. And if they go and fix that problem, then a lot of these things won't be happening.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely right. And I think about my own childhood. I'd be in school, and I'd be punching people in the face and acting up and getting in trouble and cutting school and just getting all types of craziness. And the teacher nuns would hit me and yell and say, why don't you listen? Why don't you act right? What's wrong with you? No one ever said, oh, my God, is anything going on at home? Is somebody
right.
hurting you, and that's why you're hurting other people? And I've made amends with a lot of the people who I hurt in my life. I get to talk to them on Facebook and emails, and I've talked to tons of them on the phone, and I invite them to events because I get a lot of, oh, that makes sense now. You weren't a jerk trying to hurt people. You were a damaged kid who was being tortured. So, and as a result, I went around hurting people.
And that's something else we discussed yesterday. Because a child asked me again, for me, you turned to violence. You acted out. For me, I became promiscuous and thought that the world owed me. And men were really like objects for me. And if I wanted something, I knew how to get it.
Sure.
And it's amazing how actually we adapt to the new world that we are placed in. If you hadn't have been abused, you wouldn't have been a violent, because you're not a violent person now. You wouldn't have been a violent child, but because of the world that you were placed in, the mindset that you went into, that was how you survived. You survived
Absolutely.
By being violent. And lashing out. I survived by being promiscuous. And
I was the total opposite. I didn't want the attention.
Hmm.
And that's
we all react differently.
Yeah. We all, there's three different ways that we all reacted. That's powerful.
Well, you know, another thing I've learned is that a certain part of us stops growing at that age. So I'm always going to be, part of my psyche will always be a 6 and 5 and 7 year old little boy, which works out great now, Wanda, because I'm sober and I'm happy and I got 3 little girls. So I'm running around in the yard with a princess crown, you know, singing Shrinkin' My Dinky Dinky Dink with my girls. With
yes,
no
you do. I see it all the time.
Tonight we spent an hour throwing rocks in the water and we had a great night. And, you know, it's all simple things. So it sounds crazy, but I wouldn't change any of it, you know, because when I always wondered why me, why did I have to suffer so much, why did I have to live like this, the bastard, and I'd be so angry. But you know what? Every time I share and some little kid comes forward or a person comes forward or I get a note from somebody saying that somebody came forward, I say, that's why. That's why. Right there, right then, that's why it happened. Because I needed to be able to feel their pain in order for them to come forward. I couldn't make it work unless I knew what they were feeling.
I'm there with you now, Mike, because initially, I could just be honest, I didn't want to do any of this. And it's becoming easier for me to accept my calling, but I fought this enough for about 2 years. And when people ask me, well, why do you have We Are Survivors? And my answer has always been, I don't know, because I don't want it. I mean, well, I know because God told me, but it's not something that I woke up one morning and say, I'm going to do this. I was shown that this is why I went through what I went through for so many years and why I've come out on this side. And I know this one young lady yesterday, she just couldn't believe that I had gone through what I had gone through, and I'm smiling, and I'm talking, and I walk with my shoulders back, my head is up high, and I'm inviting, and it's okay. And it just kind of, you know, I get that a lot. It's like, but you don't look like what you've gone through. And it's because God has used me. I've trust me when I say I've experienced. I've had some people even question, is my story true? There's no way in the world someone can sit and make up something so gruesome.
Absolutely.
I would hope not.
Well, for
but
us,
it's amazing.
For me, it's a healing, it's a big healing part of it. I started to feel better in the beginning, and now I feel great. And I get to, you know, bigger and bigger audiences, and eventually I like to be doing, like, college graduations, showing students that, you know, no matter what obstacles you've got in front of you, you can get over it. Whether it's as bad as what happened to me, or worse, or not so bad, or somewhere in the middle, you know, take it and learn from it and use it to be awesome, use it to be great. And, you know, it gives me a great work ethic. And I always like, I use the fork test. If I'm doing like a luncheon, when I start talking, I always tell the people at the event, don't let nobody go after me because I'm too powerful. After I tell my story, the next person, they're going to look like a jerk because they're not going to be able to keep up. So I share, and I hear people eating, and I hear the fork stop. Like you said, I hear everybody crying. I know I got them. I got them. They're listening. This is my opportunity. I want everybody to go home and talk about me that night at dinner and say, oh, my God, if this guy can get through that and be happy, so can I.
Now, I do know you were interviewed last night. You were on the news. Tell us a little bit about that.
That was because of the $1.4 million we got at the Cleveland Rape Crisis Center. I'm on their speakers bureau, and every year I run a marathon and raise money. I've raised about $18,000 for them so far, and we got a $1.4 million donation. So a local news guy wanted to know what we planned on doing and how it affects the clients. And I've been a client there for about 4 years, so had the opportunity to go on the news, and hopefully that will lead to some more stuff. You know what, Wanda? Being as good-looking as I am, forget about it. It's a cake. I'm surprised they're not beating my door down right now.
It's coming. It is coming. I bet your daughters are so proud of their dad, too.
Yeah, they know. See, they're really young. So what they know is that somebody hurt their daddy really bad when he was a little boy. And that now I go around making sure nobody can hurt other kids. And they love it. You know, they're real helpful. Them and I just had Sears donate about 9 boxes of clothing to the local hospital. Because when children are raped, we have to collect their clothing for evidence. And then we have no clothes to send them home. But now, because me and my daughter went over there and encouraged some people, they have thousands of articles of clothing now to send the kids home. So you never know where this thing is going to go, but it's all types of opportunities.
When do you sleep, Mike? When do you sleep?
As soon as I get off the phone with you, I got to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and run with my friend Tony.
Now, what is the longest marathon that you've ran?
26 miles.
One time?
Yes. Next September, I'm doing a 24-hour race. And that race is in Cleveland, Ohio. Yep, 24. I hope to run 70 miles. And I'm going to do it. Every mile is going to be dedicated to a survivor. And I'm going to invite survivors from all over the country and the world to come run a mile with me.
Oh, my goodness.
Wanda, we may have to go and join him.
I'd love to have you. You guys could split a mile. You could do a half a mile each.
I was going to say, we might have to negotiate on that mile.
I got the baby backpack. I'll stick you on my back.
You know, because I'm like, oh, I'm out of breath just thinking about it. Oh, and I do, like I said, I love to follow you and watch what you're doing and the running and your dog, you and playing with your kids. To me, it's so enlightening to see a dad, especially someone like yourself that has gone through so much, and then God has blessed you with 3 bubbly girls, and even though you are so busy, you still make time for your family. And I just want to acknowledge that and really say thank you for even being a daddy, a father figure. You're a public speaker, a marathon runner. You are making leaps and bounds and changing children's lives and how they interpret things, how they see things, how they think, how they react. And that's so important. I have this thing stuck in my head about the third grade and what you're doing with the schools. And I'm going to call you later on to discuss that because I really want to know about that a little bit more because it's things that needs to be, I hate to say it, but the southern sector, we're a little slow down here.
Yeah.
We are a little slow.
Well, you do sound like it, but I didn't think it was true.
Oh, we are a little slow. I didn't say that. It's okay. I'm going to take it like we're laid back slow. We are laid back slow.
Not everybody could talk perfectly normal like me, you know.
Really? Okay. We'll let you have that one too with the nice thick accent. We'll let you have that too.
Thank you, Wanda. I don't have an accent.
You what? Okay. There you go.
Hey, well,
we don't have one.
Yes. If we get the opportunity to have you and I on stage together, forget about it. We'll blow the doors off because we'll have both ends of it. You know, you could go real slow, and I could run around like a crazy person and yell.
Yeah, you can have that part. Yes. That would work. That would be perfect because I would stand still while you run because I would be out of breath just watching you.
Well, you'll reach some people and I'll reach some people. It takes all kinds, you know?
Yes, and I'm really excited, like I said, for what you're doing. Not only the fact that you're standing up telling a story, but the fact that you... child abuse and that you have overcome so many obstacles in your life that are the reason why you are the person you are today and the reason why you're changing lives and the reason why you're impacting children who's going to grow up and know that even when you're gone, you changed their lives. You're the reason why they went right instead of left. You're the reason why they were able to stop a predator because they were educated, because Mike wanted to make sure that no more kids were hurt, that Mike is making sure that he could save as many children as possible. And that alone speaks volumes of who you are and your character. And like I said, because I'm a mother, I thank you. And because I'm a mother that has survived child molestation, child rape, adult rape, abuse in every aspect that I can even think of. For me, being a mom who is that very overbearing, protective mother, like an umbrella protecting her child from rain, I thank God for men like you that are just as much protective as children as mothers are. You know, that's almost, you know, I don't want to say a rare find, but, you know, men and women, we nurture different. And you have this nurturing about you when it comes to children and this protective shield that you have. And I thank God for you and what you're doing.
Well, thank you. You know, I saw something on Facebook the other day that said to be the parent that you wanted as a kid. So for me, I'm going to be a little overprotective. I like to call it hypervigilant. It's kind of a little bit less crazy. And my girls know, real simple, that I need to be able to see them at all times because if I could see them, I could beat the bad guy to them. And then I give them as many tools because as they get older, like your little girl, they're going to be out there by themselves. They need to be safe. And if they're not, if something does happen, they need to come tell me so then we can take the proper action and fix it.
And that is so true. My daughter, I've always taught her is when she was able to comprehend about fighting and it was. I just kept letting her know, you know, fighting is not the way. Fighting is not the way. And I can remember twice, even when she was in college, there was an incident where she really was really in a situation where she really thought she wanted to fight. But because of what her mother's voice in her head, my daughter called me, said, "Mom, will I get in trouble if I fight?" I was like, "Yes." So she decided not to fight. And by you teaching your children about predators, sexual predators, that, because I know it works, I'm so excited for your daughters because they have no idea that they're fought with their, you know, as little kids, they're not going to really quite comprehend, but when they get older, they're going to be like, "My dad, that man, wow, what a powerful man." So I know by you teaching them and these other kids that this program that's going to be implemented in the schools, that is amazing because I know kids, you know, you can form their minds and you can teach them early, right from wrong.
Absolutely. And I'm trying to teach them everything that I didn't learn. Well,
I commend you for it. Like I said, I'm excited. I'm really
Thank
excited.
You so much.
And I all the parents that are listening and all the parents that hear you speak and get to shake your hand and hug you and touch you, now I'm a little jealous. I hadn't met you yet. Keyword,
we
yet.
Will soon.
But when they, yes, they need to thank God for you because you're something special. You're something to be reckoned with. And I want people, how can somebody follow you or, you know, find out more information about you? Tell us about that.
It's real simple. I have a website. It's simply my name, MikePistorino.com. It's Mike, PistorinoCom. And that's my Facebook handle, too. It's just MikePistorino.com. On Facebook, I have a group of volunteers that are very helpful to me. They're all survivors who've contacted me through social media and said they want to help. But they're not ready to come out yet in the spotlight, so they don't have to. But they assist me with my everything I post and my appointments and my contracts and everything I do. So on that, I want to thank you guys so much for having me on tonight. I got to go upstairs and sing some bedtime stories.
I know. Oh, my goodness. That's so precious. Thank you, Mike, for joining
us.
We really appreciate talking to you, and I will be calling you soon. Have a
blessed
night.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. I hope everyone really enjoyed that. Stephanie, any comments?
No, that was just very amazing, the things that he said and was able to share it and to hear it from a male's point of view. I think that was just very awesome.
It was that, you know, because it's there are male survivors out there, and I know that it's really a bad thing to not really know of resources and, you know, different things for them to go to. And I guess, you know, from when we do have those kind of questions from male survivors, that we do have an answer for them. Somebody needs something, we as survivors can look into to support our male survivors because they are out there and they need help just like us women, you know, and to have a male perspective and how they heal and, you know, how they feel, because he was honest. His thing is, I don't think I could talk to an abuser. And that was very powerful. It was very, and it was honest of him. And he's been in jail with them before, so he's going to have a totally different outlook on it. Because if from what that predator told him in jail, that still is like a wow to me. Like, you don't even want to change. You are stuck there, and that's where you want to be. And his thing is, I don't think I can handle. Okay. October, which is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We are survivors. Have so many events coming up. We do have October 17th, an Evening with the Stars, Domestic Violence Awareness event. That's in Shreveport, Louisiana. October 24th, we have two events, October 24th. We have the 2015 Breast Cancer Awareness Praise Brunch. And we have the Women's Conference sponsored by Granite Slaves, the very own sponsor for the radio show, October 31st. We have the first annual Talk About Domestic Violence Awareness Conference in Box Springs. And we did, as of yesterday, we had a new location for our empowerment support meeting that we have every first Wednesday of each month at Glam Pam's Upscale Resale Store that is located at 901 North Polk Street in DeSoto, Texas. The zip code is 75115. Please feel free to contact me or Stephanie with any questions, comments, and survival stories. The direct number to the nonprofit organization is 214-454-2933. Our email address is wearesurvivorsfoundation@gmail.com. Our website is www.wearesurvivorsfoundation.org. We want to thank God for you listening to our show this evening. And I pray that today something on the show was said that touches your heart. We are here to help you, to support, to guide, to listen, and to lift you up. In the name of Jesus, we will worship his holy name. God bless you, and have a good night. Good night, Stephanie.
Good night.